Vegas, Nevada. You're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas. The following is a live LV Rocks original webcast. Visit LVRocks.com for studio cam and live chat room.
Welcome back to another edition of Subject to Discussion Live at LVRocks.com. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. You can call me anything you want, just do not call me late for dinner. And once again, if it's Tuesday night in Las Vegas, it's time for Subject to Discussion time. Once again, live at LVRocks.com as well as podcasted on LVRocks.com. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the program live as well as the podcast and everybody in the chat room. Chris1019. I think Chris1019 is dead or something because he's been in there for 3 weeks now. Giorgio, Justify, and Justify 2. Justify to what? I don't know what. Net Ranger, myself, and the John are in there. And anybody out there wants to go into the chat room, just go to LVRocks.com, click on Cam and Chat, join us in there, or also on S2DRadio.com. Wow, it's a new website for the program. And thank you to the people at Media Boulevard for helping put that together so fast. Thank you very much. And that was the Centurion in charge of production, Mr. Con Solar. Thank you very much. And tonight, after the political news digest, there you go, we'll be joined by Molly, the liberalgirlnextdoor.com blogger, and we'll talk about the weekend politics. And then in the second hour, Jamie, otherwise known as Scully Girl, will join us for a review of the Stargate episodes, with both of them are outstanding, I think. And then after her, ending the program, will be Koenig Rules with a review of the 4400, and they also have some Doctor Who news. So, and once again, join us in the chat room if you want. At and the website for the program is subject2discussion.com or s2dradio.com. Join us in both of them if you wish. And we will, before we get to the news digest, go through what's in the local papers. Of course, today is election day, for a primary election day here in Vegas, and I voted and went to vote for Jack Carter, who is the running the primary for the Democratic senator seat. He's going to end up running against John Ensign, so I voted for him. In the USA Today, they had America's Golden Dream, $1 million. Being a millionaire isn't what it used to be. Well, I still like to try it, but the magic is still there, absolutely. And also Pepsi taps a new CEO. Indra Nooyi will take the job on October 1st. She's taken over the company. And also, they have an article about veteran travelers find it hard to carry on with the, of course, the business with the terrorist plot from last week with the airliners and the flight restrictions with carry-on items and everything, especially lip gloss. You know, lip gloss is a nasty weapon. You know, you can't come out of lip gloss for crying out loud. It might just blow up a plane with lip gloss. You know, so and also CarMax too. No CarMax either. You know, you can't come out of the CarMax. Census. They also have an article about the census newest arrivals fan out. Apparently, the arrivals from foreign-born growth are more or less scattering across the country. U.S. foreign-born population grew 16% from 2000 to 2005. Nevada grew percentage change. According to this, it's between 25 and 32% change with the foreign-born growth here. A lot of that's, of course, due to the casinos and everything else. California is 15% or less. I think that's kind of odd. Illinois is 15% or less as well. Arizona is the same as Nevada. 25 to 32% of the population is foreign born. So, and in the Las Vegas Review Journal, they also have an article about the taping and the primary election day, and also about Israelis and Hezbollah claim win. I don't think anybody can claim a victory there. I think everybody lost the world and, of course, our U.S. reputation, and I think Bush's presidency lost in that one. And also demand driving pain, bless you, pain at the pump. $3 per gasoline, likely to be the norm until desire declines. And somebody else said that a few months ago on this program, we'll never probably never see the gas go much far below $3 a gallon ever again. So I think they use that to get us more accustomed to the high gas prices. And when it does drop down to $2.75, $2.85, we'll think it's a big, huge price cut. And I also want to mention in the Monday's USA Today, they had a little snapshot here on the side. Says new news sources, a percentage of people in each age group saying they get at least some of their news from cell phones, PDAs, and or podcasts. Hello. Ages 18 to 29, 13%. So that's a good number there. 30 to 49-year-olds, 10%. 50 to 64-year-olds, 3%. 65 and plus never heard of cell phones or podcasts. So no. So with that being said, we'll move on to the news to you. And what's the John saying? Until desire declines, that's desire for gasoline, so we'll know that'll never happen. Also, from today, we had the Democrats determined to use terror issue to their advantage. This is from the New York Times on Tuesday. The Democrats are determined not to be outmaneuvered on the issue of national security this year and are working aggressively to cast George W. Bush as having made the nation less safe. As the anniversaries of Hurricane Katrina and 9/11 approach, the Democrats will use the latest alleged terrorist plot to drive home the point that the war in Iraq has fueled Islamic radicalism and distracted the Republicans from reinforcing homeland security. A video which appeared on Monday at the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee website included the footage of Osama bin Laden and concluded, "Feel safer? Vote for change." So, absolutely. Absolutely. We got to rally around and really stick it to these bloodthirsty Republicans. You know what I'm saying? And
law signed today directs new funds and new focus to the task of collecting vital intelligence on terrorist threats and on weapons of mass production.
Yep, there he is. I think we got a Hillary Clinton one in there too, don't we? No? Maybe. We'll see. And then Monday on the Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer, they had the Cafferty Files segment. So one of the questions was, what does it mean if the U.S. was involved in the planning of Israel's attacks on Hezbollah? One of the answers from a Robert in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He said, leaders in Israel must be out of their minds if they allowed the U.S. to plan or assist in planning a U.S. military action against Hezbollah. Our track record in the war in Iraq should have indicated to the Israelis that they should have simply gone it alone. No wonder they had so much trouble in the military action in Lebanon. So, he's making jokes about our plan, lack of thereof for Iraq. Amazing. And also, that's also from today from the Associated Press. Lamont surprised by Lieberman-Cheney terror remarks. The thwarted terrorist airline plot in Britain is sparking a bitter new round of finger pointing in Connecticut's bruising Senate race. Senate Democratic nominee Ned Lamont, the anti-war candidate who toppled Lieberman, and we all know about that, said he was surprised by Lieberman's and Vice President Count Dracula Shooter Cheney's claims that his views on Iraq could embolden terrorists. Lamont says, "My God, here we have a terrorist threat against hearth and home, and the first thing that comes out of their mind is how we can turn this to a partisan advantage." He says, "I find that offensive," Lamont said in an interview Sunday with the Associated Press. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, like I said, Lieberman should just get out of the race. If he's he lost. 18 years is long enough in the Senate. Get the hell out of there and let Lamont have a clear shot at it with who he was running against, Schlesinger. So that's, I think. I mean, he's a sore loser. You know, why does he want to go in? I saw the ad he's running. There's more to do. He just likes the power and the prestige. You know, as soon as he leaves office, he'll have to wait for a table at the Denny's with the rest of us. You know what I'm saying? And also from today, from the Democrats say that Rick Santorum staffers faked signatures. He goes, so it continues as part of their ongoing challenge of the signatures gathered for Green Senate candidate Carl Romanelli. The Pennsylvania Democrats are analyzing them for fraud. And William J. Reese, a forensic document examiner working for them, has found that a petition signed by John Michael Glick, a Santorum staffer, has four questionable signatures. These signatures belong to family members of another fellow staffer, Julianne George, Santorum's deputy director of coalitions. Uh-oh. So Santorum is struggling. Don't forget, he's the one that claimed that they found WND MDs when it was actually old, discarded trash that they found buried in the desert from years ago, from the Iran-Iraq war. So, and also from today, White House ducks questions on Connecticut race. This is from Hartford, Connecticut. As Republican leaders continue to attack Democrats for being weak on security issues after Joe Lieberman's primary loss last week, the White House declined on Monday to express support for Alan Schlesinger, the little-known Republican candidate in Connecticut's United States Senate race. I mean, he's his own party. They won't back him because they want to back Lieberman and divide the Democrats. That's what they're up to. During a news conference in Washington, Tony Snow, give us a snow job, the White House spokesman said that the president supports the Democratic process, but he would not say that he backed Mr. Schlesinger. Several important Republicans, including Ken Mellman, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, have yet to publicly support Mr. Schlesinger, who trails in recent polls to both Mr. Lieberman and Ned Lamont. So there you go right there. I don't know. He should, if he's a Republican, he should back the Republicans. Why are they playing this shell game with their support? And also today, Harold Ford, a candidate for Senate in Tennessee, said about shutting down a CIA unit charged with finding Osama bin Laden. Remember him? I thought he was the one we were after after 9/11, but I think somehow Saddam has jumped to the top of the list there. He said that the president told us that the British attacks are a stark reminder that the nation is at war with the Islamic fascists, yet the Bush administration has dismantled the very infrastructure that is responsible for catching those terrorists.
Jihad!
There you go. It's true. I mean, they dismantled the unit, the CIA unit, charged with finding UBL. For what? I mean, he's still in the loose,
Jihad!
There you go. Uh-oh. And this is from Hillary Clinton. She said that we have not done what we need to do to protect our ports, our borders, our bridges, our transit systems, our rail lines. It's a long list, she said. So, she's right on about that. I mean, good
yes,
for her.
Yes, we hear a lot of happy talk and rosy scenarios. But because of the administration's strategic blunders and, frankly, the record of incompetence in executing, you are presiding over a failed policy. Given your track record, Secretary Rumsfeld, why should we believe your assurances now?
Absolutely. He's a hack. He's like the Mr. Magoo of the Bush administration. He has no clue what's going on around him. The policy, the Iraq disaster, the plan is a disaster crumbling around his head. And he, what do you say? You have a dickens of a time finding I said anything about rosy scenarios for Iraq. And last week I trotted out five or six things that he said about rosy scenarios in Iraq. So I don't know. And also today on Hardball, Mark Green was on there. He said, he quoted Bob Herbert, a writer, I believe, for the New York Times. He said, if you believe that we should have gone into Iraq and it's working, you're either not reading the newspapers or you need therapy or you're not listening to my program. And he also went on to say that with $40 billion of what we spent in Iraq, you can use that $40 billion. You can make sure that 50% of all containers coming into our ports are inspected. He went through a whole another couple lists of what you can do with some of that money, but it's true. I mean, if you look at Iraq and you can't see a problem, you got a screw loose, or you're some kind of brainwashed, mind numbed Republican because it's a disaster over there. Was it 2,593 U.S. troops killed and something about 19,000 wounded? I mean, it's just out of control. And they said, by the time we get this over and done with, be at least $1 trillion. Imagine we could have done with some of that money here, pay down some of the debt. How about building some schools or instituting a security policy to check the items coming in the ports? I don't know. And if the Democrats don't clobber the Republicans with that, they deserve to lose. You know what I'm saying? Howard Fineman, also on the Chris Matthews show. This guy's got like 10 different shows on, but he has a syndicated show on Sundays. It's a 30-minute show. He said that the Democrats need to argue that going to Iraq has made us less safe here in the United States. He said, with the money that we have spent and the distraction that Iraq has been, and separate the war on terror and the war on Iraq. So he said, go through the money part. How much money have we spent, and where are we at? Where are we at right now? We're right back where we started with this mess. So he said, pull the troops out to the border and let the Iraqis destroy each other, and we'll just keep the border safe for the, whatever he's calling them now, the Islamic fascists and everything else. Actually, today, Bush backtracked from calling them. I guess the Saudi Arabia must have called him up on the hotline and told him, oh, please don't refer to us as Islamic fascists. Now he's calling them as folks. He's calling them folks, so I don't know. And from Jay Leno, he said, did you see the weather map today on the back of the USA Today? He said, I've never seen this before. All the states are red. It's like Karl Rove's wet dream come true. So that was pretty funny. And Monday, from the New York Times, screeners to be changed at U.S. airports. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff said Sunday that he intended to replace contractors who inspect passenger identification at airport checkpoints with staff members from the TSA. I had no idea that those people were contractors to begin with. I thought they were all TSA employees. So this is even more outrageous, you know? A move that would be one of the biggest expansions of the agency's tasks since it was set up after the aftermath of the 2001 terrorist attacks. Details of the plan to replace the contractors were still being worked out, but Mr. Chertoff said that, or Skeletor as they call them, said that the transportation agency screeners would be trained in psychological profiling under the plan. Says currently the contractors who handle the pre-checkpoint processing of identification documents are hired by airlines. Transportation agency screeners, in addition to handling checkpoint security, also do the simple labor-intensive task of picking up checked in bags and place them in the scanning machines before they are loaded onto the planes. So I had no idea that those people just checking their ID were not even TSA employees, that they're just, you know, there's contractors. So, I mean, it's right back where we started after 9/11. And also from today, from the Washington Post, for the GOP, bad gets worse in Northeast. Incumbents shy from party and the president. I say this, all this good news. Let them feed on each other. When it comes to President Bush and Republican Congress, Representative Jim Gerlach says voters in the suburban Philadelphia district are in a sour mood. No kidding. That's why when it comes to his reelection, the two-term incumbent says the name of the game is to convince those same voters that he can be independent of his own party. He has turned his standard line about Bush, when I think he's wrong, I let him know, into a virtual campaign slogan repeated in interviews and TV ads. The Iraq War and Bush's low approval ratings have created trouble for Republicans in all regions, but nowhere is the GOP brand more scuffed than in the Northeast, where this year's circumstances are combining with long-term trends to endanger numerous incumbents. So, and it goes on. It says the Republican losses in the region could echo well beyond the 2006 campaign. So we can only hope. We can only hope, I guess. Anything in the chat from New York Times, July was the deadliest month of war for Iraq. 3,438 deaths in July, a 9% increase over June, reinforces the criticism that the new Baghdad security plan is failing. That's from Giorgio.
Holy cow!
That's from Giorgio from the in the chat room from the New York Times. So we thank you very much. And Darth Hillary is in the chat room, and also joined by Darth Rumsfeld. Like I said, for a while there, you know, I was a big supporter of Hillary, and I backed off because, oh, she's so divisive and all that. Well, you know what? To hell with that. You know, I say we should all rally around Hillary and get her in the White House. That'd be like a stake through the heart of the GOP, you know? But anyway, Seymour Hirsch, investigator. Uh-oh. That's supposed to be Hillary. I don't know. That's the Cheney. That's Cheney. I hear him breathe. That sounds just like Shooter Cheney. Wow. Seymour Hirsch, investigative reporter for New Yorker magazine on Hardballs, thinks that the administration used... Wow. They used this Israel-Hezbollah war as a dry run for Iran. They urged Israel to do it sooner rather than later so that the Bush administration can evaluate it for Iran. He thinks Bush will attack Iran after the midterm election. Chris Matthews said that after the barracks were destroyed and all those troops killed in 83, that Reagan went into Grenada and he went out of office a hero. Would Bush, seeing Iraq as a failure, bomb Iran, destroy his nuke plants, and leave office as a hero as well? So, yeah, that'd be interesting. We'll see how that unfolds after the election. I don't think he'd be that stupid to do something before the election, but you never know. I think that alert would go up again before the election to scare everybody, maybe the weekend before or something like that, just to scare everybody to death. Newsweek poll, Bush's handling of terrorism and homeland security, now approve is 55%, disapprove 44%. Uh-oh, in May, approval was 44%, and disapprove was 50%. See, these people are so knee-jerk. You know, it's now he's starting to turn these poll numbers around. I hope not. People got to wake up out there. Poll by Opinion Dynamics released by Fox News. 67% of respondents think the U.S. will not stop the situation in Iraq from becoming a civil war. The coalition effort against Saddam Hussein's regime was launched in March 2003. 22,000-plus American troops have been killed or wounded. Oh, terrible. Terrible. Democrats got to pound that number home. 22,000. And what is he saying? Hillary Clinton is indeed the... I wiped my dangling Hillary off my ass. Terrible. That's your future president you're talking about. Jay Leno says, apparently the Dixie Chicks have had to cancel 14 shows on their tour because of slow ticket sales. There's some concern they're losing their fan base. How ironic is that, he says. They finally have something in common with President Bush. So that was pretty good. Jay Leno's always got the good, not too sharp, but pretty funny one-liners. Republican barrage aims to halt advance of anti-war Democrats. The Observer of the UK, the White House election strategists hope to duck criticism over domestic failures by emphasizing the need to fight terrorism. The Republican Party has launched a major attack to portray the Democrats as against the Iraq war and caught in the grip of an extremist fringe that wants to pull out of the conflict. In television ads, the newspaper columns, and television interviews, Republican politicians and conservative commentators have branded Democrats as weak in the war on terror. We're not weak in the war on terror. We just want some kind of coherent plan that doesn't change every week. You know, if you're going to fight terror, you got to hunt down UBL, catch him, fix Afghanistan, and then you should have built the plan, case against Iraq. So, I don't know. The move is paving the way for the vital November midterm elections to be fought on national security with a bitter campaign echoing the 1968 presidential election fought against the background of the Vietnam War. So, what did he say? Bring it on, right? I said, let's have this war with the GOP. Let's have it, you know. And once we defeat them and get back to the House in November, and then we'll send Hillary into the White House and help be the stake through the heart. Can the GOP use terrorism to win again? Suspected plot to blow up airliners puts issue front and center. This is from Bill Schneider of the CNN political analyst from Monday. Could there be a political fallout in the United States from the terror arrests in Britain? Typically, when Americans become fearful, their support for the president tends to go up. President Bush and the GOP used the security issue to their advantage in the previous two elections. Will the issue work for the Republicans this year? That's a big question mark. In a CNN poll, before the arrest of the terror suspects in Britain, terrorism topped a list of issues that voters said would be extremely important to their vote this year. The votes, blah, 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 going on about the margin of error. But among voters concerned about terrorism, slightly more said they would vote for a Democrat, 50%, rather than a Republican, 45% for Congress. GOP still do better on terrorism than on any other issue except for same-sex marriage. So that's something to be proud of for the Democrats. I don't know. And also Monday from CNN, Bill Richardson calls on Lieberman to step aside. New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson became the first prominent national Democrat to call on Joe Lieberman to drop his independent bid for re-election in Connecticut. Richardson said that he called Lieberman a good friend and a true public servant, but he said in a statement Thursday that he was backing Ned Lamont, the man who defeated Lieberman. Richardson says, I look forward to supporting Ned as he fights to help Democrats take back the Senate, and I call on Joe Lieberman to respect the will of the voters and step aside. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, he should take the hint. The voters rejected him, so take your cue and leave. You know, go on a vacation somewhere with your wife. What's her name? Hadassah? So, and how fun would it be if Rove listened to the show? I don't know about that. If you really want the standard to be a coherent plan that never changes, bring this up when there is a Democrat president. Absolutely, we'll have a coherent plan, you know. Robert B. Reich on ABC News this week on Sunday, he said that the Democrats are playing into the GOP's desire to paint them as anti-war, anti-national security. The Democrats are saying that the emphasis on Iraq, which is 95% of our war on terrorism, is causing more terrorism than stopping terrorism. So what was that report last year that said, what, there's been, what, 4,000 acts of terrorism in the last year than before? So anyway. And also Sunday, a survey of races show GOP prospects are sliding. This is from the CQPolitics.com website. The leading political journal, CQPolitics.com, has amended its forecast for several key congressional races that show Democrats making strides and the Republicans' prospects sliding. The most significantly, the site predicted serious trouble over pro-war GOP Rep. Chris Shays of Connecticut and four-term veteran John Sweeney of New York, both facing spirited Democratic challengers and voter disenchantment. Formerly solid Senate and House races in Arizona, Illinois, Minnesota, and Rhode Island are now up for grabs or favor the Democratic nominee due to reasons such as changing demographics, larger war chest after costly primaries, and in-house Republican grappling. So I think the more they fight amongst themselves, the better it's going to be for the Democrats. Let them slug it out amongst themselves, the GOP. This also from the Washington Post on Sunday. The war Bush isn't fighting. When unsmiling agents at the airport take away your contact lens solution, your toothpaste, and your cologne or aftershave, remember Osama bin Laden. Remember the real war on terrorism that the Bush administration and its allies decide not to fight, preferring cowboy-style military adventures. The revelation last week of the elaborate plot to blow up the airliner, blah, blah, reminds us of the real threats we face as opposed to the phantom threats that George W. Bush and Tony Blair have conjured to justify their disastrous war in Iraq. But it doesn't really matter whether the plotters were al-Qaeda soldiers taking orders from bin Laden or just a group of like-minded admirers working on their own. The plot demonstrates that al-Qaeda lives on, either as a functioning organization or even more chillingly, as an inspiration to jihadists around the world. Wow. Let's see. They say shoe bombs didn't work, and now we shuffle through the metal detectors in our socks. Liquid explosives didn't work. Now we fly with unbrushed teeth. we can be sure that somewhere in some anonymous apartment, maybe in Paris or Frankfurt, a group of unknown conspirators have absorbed the failure of the London plot and are ready to begun to develop a new approach to mass murder. Let's see. Condoleezza Rice speaks of building a new Middle East, but the Bush administration's construction plans seems to begin with the setting the old Middle East on fire. So wow, that's pretty strong wording there. So Condoleezza Rice, the girl with the David Letterman smile, don't forget. And also from Monday, analysts, pact won't improve U.S. image. A U.S.-backed diplomatic pact to end more than a month of war between Israel and Islamic militants in Lebanon may stop the worst of the killing and retire to daily television images of burning buildings and suffocated children. But it will not do much to improve the image of America in the Arab world. This war is widely viewed as a joint U.S.-Israeli venture that slaughtered innocents and wrecked homes, roads, and businesses in a fragile democracy the Bush administration has said it supports. Oh, yeah, we support it at the same time we were giving Israel more weapons to drop on their heads, you know, while we're trying to negotiate peace, you know. The terms of the peace deal may only reinforce twin perceptions in the Arab world. The United States did too little, too late to rein in Israel and end the fighting, and a friendship with the United States is worth little because the United States will back Israel no matter what, foreign policy analysts have said. The U.S. reputation as an honest broker has been eroding under this administration for some time. This just crystallized what the Arabs thought, said Jonathan Clark, a former British diplomat now at the Cato Institute. He said that the Arabs had grown to believe that the U.S. and Israel had become one country. The Lebanon conflict has heightened anti-U.S. sentiment in the region, with frequent protests in moderate U.S. allies, countries like Egypt, Jordan, and Kuwait. Saudi Arabia and the other U.S. allies in the region say the bloodshed only fuels radicalism. That's what I'm saying. We blew it right there. I mean, how the hell can we be the merchants of peace and try to negotiate a peace deal while at the same time we're sending, giving Israel more missiles and bombs to drop on them? And there was another story that supposedly, I don't know if I have it here, I was watching when I was leaving, that supposedly, we were helping them plan this war, or they shared the war plans with the administration. It's like, oh my God, are you kidding me? So what else we have here? From Sunday, Melman attacks Murtha with report retracted 6 weeks ago. This is how desperate they are, these bloodthirsty, clueless, brainless, brainwashed Republicans. White House officials and surrogates have fanned out in a coordinated Rovian campaign to smear their opponents as defeatists and cut-and-runners. In a massive email yesterday, a former Rove deputy, Ken Melman, turned his guns on the patriot, John Murtha. The message from Connecticut is clear, and Ned Lamont isn't alone. He is joined by John Murtha, who claims America is more dangerous than Iran and North Korea. Melman is referencing a June 25th story in the South Florida Sun Sentinel, which reported that Murtha said he believed the American presence in Iraq is more dangerous to world peace than nuclear threats from North Korea or Iran. 3 days later, the newspaper retracted the report. Murtha was actually citing an international public opinion poll, not expressing his own views, but why let facts get in the way of a perfectly good smear? So there they are, using a retracted story to attack the patriot John Murtha. And also, Clinton denounces Cheney for terrorism comments. This is from the WNYC newsroom Sunday from New York City. Senator and future President Hillary Clinton has denounced Vice President Dick Cheney for saying terrorists would be emboldened by the results of Connecticut's Democratic primary. I mean, he's out of his mind. I mean, he just says this stuff. He doesn't give a damn. Reporter said that's where an anti-war candidate defeated Joe Lieberman. Hillary Clinton says, she says, I don't take anything he says seriously anymore. I think that he has been a very counterproductive, even destructive force in our country, and I am very disheartened by the failure of the leadership from the president and vice president. So there is Shooter Cheney shooting off at the mouth again. So I think now we'll be joined by Molly from the Liberal Girl Next Door. There she comes. And Molly, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Sean. How are you?
Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Yeah, just going off on the Republicans a little bit, so I hope you don't mind.
Oh, no, certainly not. You know, Cheney is a perpetual liar. He can't seem to stop himself anymore. It's like breathing for him at this point.
Yeah, he suffers from diarrhea of the mouth or something like that. I mean,
yes, he does.
He says this stuff. I mean, if it was the Democrats saying it, they'd be stringing him up from the closest tree. You know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is. I guess this dragged him out of his hole. Where has he been the last couple months? You know,
hiding away. I think it is curious the timing of him coming out and starting to, you know, make these comparisons to, you know, Senator Clinton is like Osama bin Laden, and Lamont is the Al Qaeda candidate, and these talking points, he comes out of his hole to start spewing that stuff, almost as if it's a coordinated effort.
Yeah, and then you know what? They had that. I don't know if I had that story about the terrorist plot from last week. That they timed it. Cheney was briefed on the day before, and he came out saying something about the Democrats the day before, and kind of set them up for this. And then,
oh, yeah.
And then this broke the next day. It's like, don't they have any conscience whatsoever?
Oh, of course not, Sean. They haven't had a conscience for a long, long time.
Well, that's obvious. Look all the money and precious blood we spent in Iraq, huh?
Exactly.
And what do you think of the Lieberman Lamont? Now it's turned into a fiasco. But what do you think about that?
I thought that was a really amazing thing. I was, hoping that Lamont was going to be able to pull that out, and the polls were really encouraging beforehand. And it was so nice to see him win that seat, because I really think that it's kind of a watershed moment for the Democratic Party. And, you know, Lieberman has been an albatross around the neck of the party for so long, and I'm glad to see that the Connecticut voters decided to cut him loose, and I think that this is a chance for the Democrats to really start acting like Democrats again.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's got to get out of there. I mean, he's a sore loser. You know, whatever reputation he has is going to be shot to hell now with him running as an independent Democrat.
Exactly.
And then I think Bill Clinton told him to get out of the race, and now I said Bill Richardson told him to get out.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't think he's going to listen. I think he's going to stay into the bitter end. What do you think?
I don't know. I think that at a certain point he's going to have to realize that his money's going to dry up, his support is going to dry up, and the only support he's going to get is from probably the White House and maybe from Ken Mellman and the Republican Party. But that doesn't help him get those moderates and the Democrats that are still supporting him at this point. It doesn't give him enough votes. It doesn't give him enough money to actually win. I think he wants to stay in, but I think ultimately he's not going to be able to.
Yeah, he's. I don't know if he's addicted to the power, or like I said, instead of waiting like the rest of us in the line at Denny's, he'll get seated first. You know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's 18 years. It's long enough for him.
Oh yeah, and it's definitely long enough for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I like that was David Sirota said that we should all start calling him the de facto GOP nominee, Joe Lieberman.
Yeah, and they won't even endorse their own, the GOP won't even endorse their own nominee, which is ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, it tells you where Lieberman's support comes from. I mean, he's been a staunch supporter of Bush, you know, the entire time he's been in office. He can say that he's been challenging the president, but he really hasn't, especially not on the really important things like the war.
Oh yeah, he went once. He hopped right in the bed with Bush over this war in Iraq, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he must like this so much because he's still in bed with him over this Iraq business, you know.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it's $1 trillion later. You know, they say by the time we get out of there, probably at least $1 trillion in Iraq.
It's staggering, isn't it?
Yeah, it depends what we could have done with that money here in the United States.
I think that kind of is the point that people are reaching, though. It feels to me like there's a shift going on amongst the population. I mean, you can see that in the polls that show that more people would trust Democrats for, you know, in handling national security issues and the war on terrorism. And so there seems to be this shift going on, and I think that has a lot to do with it. The war, the fact that people don't want to be there, and that they see how much money is being spent on this and how much that's taking away from, you know, the things that we really need here at home.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you watch, do you watch Hardball at all?
I do watch Hardball. I try not to, but
really?
Sometimes I just can't help myself. That Chris Matthews makes me crazy.
Really?
Sometimes.
Well, he was pretty, well, I don't know, the guest he was on fire, Mark, what's his name, Mark something, or he had him on, and he said that, you know, with $40 billion of the Iraq money, you could be inspecting at least half of the cargo coming into the United States in the ports.
Oh, yeah. Yes. We'd be a lot safer. Plus, there wouldn't be so much anti-American sentiment in the Middle East, and there wouldn't be so much radicalization of people going on right now. I've heard reports of, you know, moderates saying, we don't want this, but we don't feel like we can challenge this radical Islam that's, you know, kind of taking hold and taking root in our neighborhoods because there's so much chaos, and we feel like we don't have anybody standing behind us.
Well,
and
yeah,
we're just sitting there fanning the flames of all of this.
Yeah, and like I said, I read that story about how the Arab world is viewing the United States now, that we pretty much will back Israel, you know, blindly on anything they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then like I said, you know, Hezbollah is a terrorist group. I mean, how we could have gone over there and sent the girl with the David Letterman smile, Condi, over there to broker a peace agreement while we're, you know, giving Israel bombs on, you know, in the back door. I mean, it just,
yeah,
and they see right through it. They know what's going on.
Oh yeah, I think they've seen it from the United States for a very long time, and it's just gotten worse since the Bush regime took over. So
yeah, and they said that the administration won't talk to its enemies. And so that's a complete flip from the previous administration. At least they had some kind of dialogue with their enemies. You know what I mean? Either directly or indirectly, maybe through third party countries like Sweden or something else.
I know, and I go back and forth trying to figure out if it's that this administration doesn't care to negotiate, doesn't understand how to negotiate and how to, bring people to the table to come up with solutions, or if it's just that they benefit from the chaos that is created by not dealing with the rest of the world and kind of going at it alone and stirring up the pot of trouble. I mean, you look at who's really benefited from the economy, the war economy. Mm. You know, it's them and their friends.
Yeah, the oil and the military industrial complex, all
exactly.
That's going crazy. And there's, I went through that litany a few weeks ago. There's, you know they're going to come after the election wanting billions of dollars more to resupply some of the, the tanks. We have supposedly 500 tanks sitting around waiting to get repaired and everything. And now the troops that are here are having to send their supplies to Iraq to resupply the troops there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big mess. And this bill, they won't give the bill to Congress until after the election's over. So, because, you know, if they did it before the election, it'd be the end of the GOP.
Yeah.
And then I see on your blog you met Bill Clinton, huh?
I met Bill Clinton when he was president, actually, but I didn't get to meet him this time. I did get to go cover the event, but he was very, very far away. I didn't get to actually meet him this time around.
He commands a room when he walks into it, doesn't he?
Yes, he certainly does. He's a very, very charming guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I worked on his campaign in Chicago, and it's amazing. He's still popular. I mean, he talks without a script. I mean, a lot of them can't. He just goes off the cuff, and it's amazing what he can put together on his own.
Yeah. He really does know how to take the broad strokes of what the Democratic Party should stand for and what it does stand for, and kind of making the distinction between the two parties. I wish that what he said was more true today than it is, but I really feel like this, you know, Lamont-Lieberman has raised a lot of issues within the Democratic Party that it can be true again about the party, that it really can be a party of the people again.
True. And I don't know if you saw what Hillary was talking today, and she's really starting to come out swinging a little harder and harder. I mean, last week she took Rumsfeld apart, and now this week she's going after the administration head on. I think I lost her quote somewhere, but she's really starting to ratchet it up. And then same thing with Harold Ford.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're all, they smell blood in the water,
Yeah, I think it's that, and I keep bringing it back to this Lamont win, because there are so many Democrats who are afraid of what happened to Lieberman, and that is a really good thing for the party, for the senators in office who have not been real vocal critics, that this gives them, the okay, we're behind you. The people are behind you. It's what we want. And so I'm glad to see them kind of picking up that ball and really taking it to the administration. It's what they haven't done for too long, and I'm glad to see them doing that now.
Yeah, as I said, for a while they're just rolling over, and, we really don't want to criticize too much. And I said, let's take a stand for crying out loud and go at them, head to head.
Yep.
I said, for a while there, I was a real strong Hillary supporter for a while. Then I backed off. Oh, she's too divisive. The country needs to come. I said, I decided that the other day. I'm going to hell with that. Let's fight to get her in and stick it to the GOP,
Yeah. I don't know. She's not exactly my candidate. I think that she would make a fine president.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm still not on the Hillary bandwagon quite yet. She has a lot more. She has to do a lot more to impress me at this point, but she's moving in the right direction, and that's a very good thing.
Yeah, especially the way she tore Rumsfeld a new one last week. I mean,
that was great footage.
He didn't want to come up there, and then somehow, some way, she managed to get him up there, and I think he lived to regret it. I think he had to go change his underwear after she got done with him, huh?
I think he might have, yes.
And really, though, he's been asking for that for so many years, because they act holier than thou when they come up there. How dare you question our war plan? I'm like, what war plan? You don't have one. It changes every week.
Exactly.
Where are the roses that are thrown at the feet? Where's the, what's that, that idiot said, Wolfowitz, we're paying for this war of the oil money and all this BS. It's their own fault. They bought hook, line, and sinker.
And I hear a lot of people give them the benefit of the doubt, saying that they actually believe that was true. I don't think that it's possible that they could have been that incompetent to really believe their own rhetoric.
No, they're just and Cheney's out there trying to make the Democrats look like and then they had that one ad with Hillary, opponent, the Republican opponent in New York, is running an ad with her picture alongside Osama bin Laden.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just disgusting.
It is disgusting, and I think that the public has had enough of it. I don't think that the fear card and reminding people of 9/11 and scaring them that if Democrats, get in office, that we're going to, it's going to be fascism taking over and terrorist attacks all over the place. I just don't think people are going to buy it this time around.
Yeah, and then the I keep saying I wouldn't be surprised. As I mean, a week before the election, a weekend before, they raised that threat level. Just they did that during the 04. Remember that? Like every we raised the threat level. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Every time Kerry's poll numbers got a little higher, so changed the threat level.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I know. I'm afraid of that too. I'm afraid what they will pull out of their hat for the October surprise.
Their bag of tricks or something like that.
Well,
Matthews was saying that he said would Bush, saying that his Iraq strategy is a disaster, is like the Titanic. Will he go out and bomb Iran? In order to go out of the White House as a hero.
Yeah, that's been a big fear of mine as well for a long time. And I feel like the way that the situation between Lebanon and Israel was handled by the United States, not getting involved and sitting back and letting it fester, my big fear was that the whole point of that for the Bush administration was to widen it to involve Syria and Iran. That's been the rhetoric for so long. They've wanted to escalate the situation, and they want regime change in Iran so badly that if it becomes politically necessary, I'm afraid that they'll go ahead and do it.
Yeah, actually, I'm on your blog now. You have the story at the top, Lies, Paper Tigers, and Blogs. Oh, my.
Sometimes I love writing titles.
Yeah, well, sometimes it feels like we're in the Wizard of Oz. You know, it's the Wizard.
It does.
It seems like we're in the land of the GOP. We're supposed to trust them blindly. And
yep.
But you're going about the president of Iran. Don't even ask me to pronounce his name. Ahmadinejad, I think. Is that it?
Ahmadinejad.
Yeah. Now he's blogging now. And
I found that so funny. I don't know why. I was wondering if maybe George Bush would start his own blog. Misspellings and bad punctuation and all.
I wonder if he knows how to spell the word blog.
I don't know.
And what else he's got on there? He have on there that about that story about the Iraqi soldiers dumping babies out of incubators and lead up to the Gulf War. Yeah, that turned out to be a bunch of BS as well.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, and there's stories coming out that aren't true about Iran as well. There was, it was a couple months ago, I think it was a Canadian newspaper, then it was picked up here in the U.S. that was reporting that the Iranian parliament had passed a law requiring all people to wear specific clothes, color-coded, depending on their religion, as a way of marking religious minorities, and that was completely bogus. That wasn't true either. So.
Really? I remember that. Boy, they're pounding the drums on that. It's horrible. It's
that was a completely untrue story, a completely manufactured story, probably out of the same PR company that handled the lead-up to the first Gulf War. It's just really bad. I was speculating that maybe this story about Ahmadinejad, using his blog to give viruses to anybody with an Israeli IP address. That was the story.
Oh.
I was speculating. I wonder if that's true.
Huh. Yeah, you go on, you say, this is a long line of transgressions on personal freedoms in this country that we can thank this administration, our GOP Congress, for. We know the Bush administration has and will continue to ignore our own constitution and laws when spying, investigation, and locking up American citizens. But thanks to this treaty, they can now use other countries' laws as a basis for doing so.
That's about the cybercrime treaty that mm-hmm. was just passed Congress. It's a treaty that will allow countries to cooperate with one another in catching cyber criminals and cyber terrorists, that sort of thing. But it doesn't do enough to protect our liberties here. So if I violate Chinese law, apparently, under this new treaty, our FBI can investigate me for that.
Wow. Are you kidding me? So basically the United States Constitution is being ignored once again by this administration, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Well, I think that's kind of the hallmark of this administration is that, it ignore the laws that you don't like, and if you can't do that, then go ahead and violate them, and then just keep them secret afterwards.
It's disgusting. I understand this. I thought the GOP, the conservatives, was supposed to be the party of freedom, and all this stuff, and then the Democrats was supposed to be the commies, supposedly, and the free spenders. Look, they're spending us into the poorhouse, and mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the big reasons why they're going to be in trouble, mm-hmm. and why they are in trouble right now. My grandparents are fiscal Republicans. I mean, they're Republicans. They're fiscal conservatives. They're not concerned about gay marriage, and they're not concerned so much about a woman's right to choose. But they like the Republican fiscal policy. They have not been able to vote mm-hmm. over the last several elections because they couldn't bring themselves to vote for the Democratic candidates, but they certainly couldn't support the Republicans. I'll be curious to see what will happen with them in the midterms. But I think that there's a lot of people like that, a lot of moderates who are not happy with the way the Republicans have really just been irresponsible with our money.
Yeah, reckless. I mean, they say if anything, if they're going to censure him or impeach him, it should be for plundering the National Treasury.
Exactly.
Really. I mean, it's disgusting how much money, and we're not even done yet with I'm sure there's money that's hidden we don't know about yet. But I mean, it's just some of this is just nonsense.
Oh yeah, there's still plenty of money to steal. I'm sure they're not done yet. They're going to take as much as they can. I remember when Bush first won in 2000, I said, you know what, he knows, I said to my husband, he knows he's only got 4 years. There's no way he's going to get reelected. So this is just going to be like a smash and grab mm-hmm. administration. They're just going to smash and grab. They're not going to try and steal daintily. They're going to try and steal massive and fast.
In broad daylight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They've had 8 years to do it.
Yeah.
It was more than I thought.
We mean one. He was selected in 2000. What are you talking about?
Exactly. I'm sorry. I usually say that. That was a
Freudian
slip on my part.
And I like how you say about the when housing bubble burst, which is absolutely, they keep saying all the economy is great. The economy, I'm paying $3 a gallon for gas here and everything's going through the roof. You say you receive offers every day encouraging me to take equity out of my house to spend or whatever I want. Spend, spend, spend. And Bushies keep telling us to worry about terrorism, but not about the economy. And then going back to what Clinton was in, it's the economy stupid.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. I think that I think for a long time they couldn't understand why they were looking at they were looking on paper and the economy looked good. Wow, things are really great. Stocks are up. It's all good. Why are people pissed off about the economy? I think that so many of them, Bush especially, so removed from what it's like to be a working American, that we out here in the real world can feel what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like the economy's bad. It mm-hmm. feels like we're getting squeezed from all sides. And, that's going to hurt them real bad come November.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what kind of reports they're looking at. Maybe it's in the coloring books or something, but I mean, it's the economy's horrible. I mean, I don't know how they can say. I mean, the big business is doing well, but I mean,
I think what they look at.
Yeah, and the casinos here are doing gangbusters, but I keep telling them, people come up to me to check, at the hotel, when I worked at the front desk, they bring 5, 6, 7, 8 credit cards, and, 7 of the 8, 4 of the 5, 5 of the 6 are all declined, declined, declined.
Ugh.
These people, they come into Vegas, it's like, what are you doing here? I remember there was some kind of report that came out that, I don't know, some percentage we're not saving anymore. We're now in debt more than we're saving. Or it's some kind of, it's like the first time it's gone the opposite direction that people are not saving.
I think it's something ridiculous like 80% of the population is living paycheck to paycheck. Mm. No matter how big their paycheck is, they're living outside their means, and most of their money goes right out the door.
Yeah. And then in the chat room, Darth Rove is saying, if the Dems are going to promise to spend less money if elected, let us bring it on. I don't know how we can spend more money.
I don't either.
I have no idea. I mean, sooner or later, reality has got to slap these politicians in the face, knowing we have to do something with the debt and the deficit. I mean, it's what, $8.5 trillion? I mean, that's how soon until China gets sick of financing our debt that they're going to come, with the bills and we got to pay due?
Exactly. Well, I think that's why the president keeps telling us to keep buying stuff. I mean, everything I buy when I go, I see the Made in China label everywhere. As long as we keep buying, I guess they'll keep supporting us. But I don't know.
I don't know. I keep saying, with this Bush and his administration, they seem to care more about democracy in Iraq than they do here in the United States. You know what
That's
I'm saying?
That's for sure.
I mean, it's so blatant. It's sickening.
Yeah.
And what else you got going? You do your podcast tonight, is that right?
Yes, I am. I'm right after I finish here, I'm going to head down and do our podcast.
Podcasting Liberally, right?
Which is a yes, and you can find the archives, and the show will be up tomorrow at podcastingliberally.com. Mm-hmm.
Now, the big I didn't really prepare for this, but the big winner politically last week to you, who thinks the big winner politically? Ned Lamont? Or
Ned Lamont. I mean, it has to be Ned Lamont, yeah.
How about the big loser from last week?
No, that would be Joe Lieberman. I mean, I can't think of anybody who lost bigger than Joe Lieberman.
No.
Even though he tried to spin it as a win, you know, that it's only halftime, he really did lose.
Yeah.
And, you know, not very many senators lose that way. So.
No, they expected him to lose by a lot more than he lost by, so he closed the gap there at the end.
He did. But for an incumbent senator not to get the nomination of his party is pretty bad.
Yeah, that tells you that something's wrong, that people, either the voters are seeing through him and everything else. Because I remember we had Chip on for last week. He does a blog about political sports, and he's from Connecticut.
Uh-huh.
And he said that, you know, Lieberman's, you know, ever since he was running as the vice president, he's, you know, more ignoring Connecticut and being more of a national politician. So actually, so his ego has gotten way out of control.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't do that. I mean, I don't remember where I was reading it, but we were talking about Ted Kennedy being one of those kinds of senators that is very much a national senator. But he's got an incredible staff that takes care of the people and the businesses and is in touch with the community all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're going to be a national senator, you can't ignore your constituents. They will boot you out.
That's true. I mean, Ted Kennedy manages to balance, you know, local issues with national issues. I mean, he's...
Yep.
He's the only one that's managed to drive home the fact about the minimum wage and everything else.
Yeah.
And
that's a big issue. That's one of the things I really like John Edwards for, too, is for really kind of taking the time to discuss the issues of the working poor and try and bring that to the forefront. That's a really great thing, and it needs to happen. It's been ignored for so long, and really minimum wage is poverty in this country.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, how can you survive? You know, it's amazing on that. And
yep.
Edwards has been showing up a little more on TV. He was on, what was he on? I think he was on Hardball or something. He showed up somewhere else. He's starting to get more and more visible.
Yes, he is.
But I don't know. Hillary's got so much money. You know, she's raised, what, $35 million, and she has $22 on hand?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, she's going to be hard to beat simply for that reason. I mean, she's got more money than anybody else.
Yeah, and then the funny thing I found today, I was looking through the election rules and everything, that since this is a senatorial campaign, she could roll this $22 million over into a presidential campaign, and
yep.
yet these people who gave for a Senate campaign could turn around and give her money for the presidential, because
yep.
it's two different campaigns. So I'm like,
yep.
oh, that's
yep.
even makes it even more like daunting. Like, holy Christopher, you know, she could get $60 million right off the bat.
Yeah, but the really interesting thing too is you know, seeing what happened with Ned Lamont. If a candidate catches on fire and really is inspiring people, because of the internet and because there's so many bloggers everywhere now, that, you know, a message can be spread, you know, so fast through so many different avenues, that there is a way to, you know, for somebody to catch up financially. I mean, the blogs have shown that they can raise money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much, but for a presidential race, it'll be interesting. I mean, Howard Dean did a great job raising money on the internet, so...
Yeah, but $20 million though—that's a lot of money to.
It is.
That's a ton of cash. But do you think, like, Daily Coast and them, they really? I guess, you know, I guess he does get a lot of credit. But is it him or is it the other bloggers too? I mean, he's like, he's getting a lot of credit for that.
Well, I think that it's his site is definitely a meeting place, and
mm-hmm.
He has so many readers. But I think that they do give credit to you know, local blogs. It really is about, you know, local blogs dealing with local issues and working on local campaigns and raising money for local candidates and really sharing resources and stuff. So I think that you know, Coase and Jerome Armstrong at MyDD, they really have a lot of pull and a lot of influence, but what they do best really is kind of pulling people together.
True.
And, you know, they've shown with their Netroot endorsed candidates, which, you know, Lamont was, they can raise money, and they, you know, get other blogs to raise money as well. So
yeah, well, this will be interesting. We're heading to an interesting time in the election process where the traditional ways are meeting the new ways, and let's see how it unfolds.
Well, it's interesting. We've got two local candidates here who have really embraced the blogosphere, who give us information, wanted to meet with us, and that's been really great, and we've been helping them raise money in turn. So
very good.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah. Well, Molly, we'll let you go. End of our time with you. We thank you for being on.
All right. Thank you so much, Sean.
Thank you. We'll check out the liberalgirlnextdoor.com, correct?
Yes, please.
Thank you very much.
All right. Have a nice evening.
You too. Thank you. And that was Molly. We thank you for being on, and we'll be back in a few minutes with the second hour of Subject to Discussion, the sci-fi side of it. So hopefully we'll all get along during the sci-fi part. And Scully Girl will be joining us, and we'll be right back. Thank you very much.
Made me. Cheney's got a gun. Dick Cheney's got a gun. The safety's come undone. He's squinting in the Texas sun. What did our leader do? Who did put a bullet through? They say when Cheney goes to Texas, you'll find him hunting.
And welcome back to the second hour of Subject to Discussion live at LVRocks.com as well as podcasted at LVRocks.com. Thank you everybody joining us live and as well as the on the podcast. Thank you very much. And everybody in the chat room, pretty lively. Anorexic Pillow, BSG Fan PT, Chris 1019, Darth Condi. Condi, the girl with the David Letterman smile, Darth Rove, Giorgio, Justify, Koenig Rules, Net Ranger, Scully Girl, myself, and the John are in the chat room. And, Wow. And now we'll be joined by Jamie, a.k.a. Scully Girl, with our review of the Stargates. And Jamie, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Ah, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And actually, you know what? I enjoyed both of the shows tonight. I mean, Friday were outstanding, huh?
Yeah, I did too. I liked Atlantis better though this week.
So, you know what? We must have something going on because so did I. I thought, well, SG-1 was, did the whole thing in Jack's cabin and all that. It was kind of, thrown together, it seemed like. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was kind of confusing. I didn't realize till after the fact that the mutated animal was actually supposed to be a grizzly bear. I guess I somehow missed that the first time around.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I knew it was something mutated, but I thought it was like, I don't know, some kind of alien thing. And then I realized after, I'm like, should have known that.
Yeah, now SG-1 had Uninvited. It was a premise where Landry was supposed to gather the SG-1 team at Jack's cabin. You know, and I think it's out of why are they going to his cabin for? Isn't there a cabin they could rent? Why are they using his? You know what I mean?
I don't know. They use that for a lot.
I guess it's a way to drop him into the storyline or something. I don't know, because next week is a big 200th episode. Yeah. So, I mean, it's setting the stage, I guess. And then Mitchell arrives in that real cool, what was it, a Mustang or something? That black Mustang?
Yeah. I don't know cars.
Oh, okay. That was pretty nice.
Yeah.
And then he gets out and he says, you know, Landry tells him that right now it's just the two of them. Excuse
yeah,
me, and they'll have fun and everything. And Teal'c is assisting SG-3, and the colonel's on, was that P9J333? What kind of planet is that, you know?
They need to give him regular names.
And then now, like, Sam is kind of in charge while Landry's away, right?
Right, so she can't go. And I know when they're ready to go to the planet to find out about this creature that's attacking people, she doesn't want Vala to go, and I really like that part. Vala's like, well, I could spend some quality time with you, and of course, then she shoves her out the door practically. So.
Get rid of
her.
She
had a gun this time. I noticed she actually got her own gun, too.
Yeah, I saw that. She had her own gun. Yeah, and they all played on that the fact that Mitchell's alone with Colonel Landry, and like, oh, I'm sure he's having a blast with him. You know?
Yeah, he was definitely irritated by that.
And I like how they did the scene where Mitchell's on his laptop, and then Landry says, you know, you've been working on that report for. And he goes, you're not really working on the report. So he knew it was kind of using that to distract him, to take him away from what's going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And where else? Now they went to that planet, right? And then the other team is under attack. And now Teal'c kind of had a big role in this episode as well, huh?
Yeah, he did. He was kind of the main one going after this creature that they did kill the first one, and they found out that it was actually a tiny, I guess you call it, slug worm parasite inside of it that was mutating it and changing the what turned out to be a grizzly bear.
Yeah, and then I like how when the creature's attacking me, Vala goes back and starts dialing the Stargate, and then the Teal'c comes out of nowhere, and then he ends up on top of her.
Yeah, and he throws a grenade.
Yeah, and she says something, I don't know, about please, not now. I don't know, whatever
it is.
Yeah,
we don't have time for this right now, something that extent.
I thought it was funny, a little more humor, you know, and it shows her with the others, because now Daniel Jackson wasn't in this one at all, right?
Yeah, he still hasn't been there. I guess he's still in Merlin's library.
Really? Now, was he in the last episode as well?
I think they just mentioned him. I don't know what's up with that, but I guess with Richard Dean Anderson coming back, they probably don't care as much.
Wow.
But he's definitely in next week, because I know there's photos of him in the TV Guide.
Huh, I wonder why he wasn't in last week to save money in the budget or something, huh?
Yeah. Who knows?
And then they went to the back to the cabin, and Mitchell comes out, hears a noise in the cabin with the thunder and the lightning and all that, and then they
almost shoot each other.
Yeah, I thought that was
a good scene. I think they had them and Teal'c, I think, were the most in this episode, but I thought the interaction between them was good, and it did get some humor in there.
Yeah. And then they show some of those scenes are pretty brutal of those hunters are getting ravaged by that those creatures, huh?
Yeah, on the sand on the other planet. So
yeah, I like the effects they're using, and it's you know I don't know. Obviously they got more money to spend on the budget or something, because it's just like those guys are really ripped apart by whatever it was that was attacking them, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
They keep delaying the road. Now Mitchell tried to leave, and they said no, the road's washed out. You can't leave. And then the team again is delayed going there because of the roads being flooded out. And they said, oh, he's going to have to stay, having the time of his life. They played on it during the whole episode that, you know, Mitchell's really having a blast with Landry. Huh?
Yeah. And they also made, a big thing about, they were talking how, Mitchell brought SG-1 back together. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what he did. He needs to make sure that it works that way, because that's what's, that they're, better as a team than apart.
Now, they broke up. They broke up or something. He ended up bringing them all back together.
Yeah. At the beginning of the season, when he came in, that was last season. Because of when Jack was gone and everything, the team had sort of split up, and he was put in charge of Stargate. Well, SG-1, Jack put him in charge, and he was like, he wanted to do this with everybody, and it took him quite a few episodes to convince them all to come back. For a while, Teal'c and Daniel were kind of off, and Sam wasn't there as much since Amanda had been pregnant, so. Mm.
Huh. So I was wondering what that was all about, because, you know, I wasn't watching, you know, that seriously. But and then they get the sheriff's police, and they all go off in the woods, and he finds that one guy using a cloaking device.
Yeah, from the Sodans, and Sam realizes that it is their fault that it happened, because they were there, and evidently, originally they had been giving off radiation, but they had corrected it, obviously, so they wouldn't get sick. And without that radiation, that was what was causing the worms to come, because before it would have repelled them. But, you know, they can't be around radiation, but obviously if they had symbiotes in their stomachs, it wouldn't have bothered them. So that was why it hadn't happened before.
Yeah, and then now they go back to Stargate Command, and then Teal'c is with that thing, right?
Yeah, he's trying. You mean when he's trying on the vest?
Yeah, and then now they give him a medical exam. Who's that doctor now? Is that what's her name? The doctor?
You know, I see it on the one side. I'm not sure of her name, but I know she's been in a lot of things.
Yeah, but she's not. I thought maybe they recast that role of the doctor who was on it last year.
I don't know. Yeah, Dr. Lamb. I don't know. I mean, I assume her name was Dr. Lamb.
Yeah,
her name was Dr. Lamb. Landry's daughter. I don't know. I don't think that's supposed to be the same character. I was on Gate World, but I do not remember what the name. Let me look under.
Yeah, I mean, it's wondering, did they really explain why they got rid
Dr.
of her?
Dr. Redden.
Redden.
That's her name. Did
they ever explain why they got rid of Dr. Lamb? I mean,
I don't know. I kind of assumed she was still there. They haven't showed her. I don't know if it's important or not.
Yeah, it's kind of, well, because I remember seeing it last year before Galactica. They're saying that it's his daughter, and they're kind of sort of starting to get along towards. And then also now she's gone. You know.
Well, she's Michael Shanks' real wife. I mean, they can easily get her back if they decide to.
Yeah. I thought that was strange, because it seemed like there's something to go, somewhere to go in that storyline.
Yeah, they definitely had her in, and then they just kind of dropped it out, so I'm not real sure.
Yeah, because they really don't have a doctor on that show. I thought,
since they got rid of Frasier, which they shouldn't have done.
Because Sam is more like a scientist, right?
Yeah.
And Daniel's more of
archaeology,
and Teal'c is like a Klingon, kind of, you know. And and the rest, who else?
Balavitz, he's just kind of there for the humor now, I think, if they're trying to steal things.
Yeah, and Mitchell is more like the leader of the group.
Right.
Yeah. Now he's a colonel, right? And so is Sam. She's a colonel, right?
Yeah, but as far as I know, he's still ahead of her.
He's ahead of her. Okay.
He's a different. I don't know the ranking, but he's I think a different colonel.
Oh, because I was thinking that. Go well. With her taking charge, they go, well, they're trying to save money. Maybe they'll get rid of Beau Bridges and have Sam take over as the, general.
Yeah, but then she wouldn't be in it as much. I don't know how well that. I mean, they could do it, but I can't see it working as Then she wouldn't be in it as much.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. And then they ended the program with them all at the poker table in the cabin.
Yeah. Sam wins and jokes like that. What's he say? Something like, I have it written here somewhere. A real warrior knows when to fold them.
Yeah. And then Mitchell knows. He goes, oh, no, a real warrior knows when to hold them.
Yeah.
And then she ends up winning the money. What's his name? Landry said, deal me in.
Yep.
Yeah, I like that one-liner where something about his... Mitchell was saying about, his face, almost like the look on his face when he said, like, told him to get down or something like that.
Yeah, last night was the best night in a while because he told him to get down.
he told me to loosen up, but not that much. I like Beau Bridges. He's an outstanding actor.
Yeah, he's a good actor. Yeah. And he works well.
Yeah, with everybody. I think I could see a dynamic with him and Mitchell, like maybe like a father-son type of a relationship.
Yeah, sort of kind of like with before with Hammond a little bit, but. Not quite the same, but kind of the same thing.
Yeah, so I maybe. And then, what else? And now next week's the big 200th episode, so everybody's looking forward to that.
And there's a whole bunch, I know, a big article in the TV Guide about it. I don't know if you read it, but it says it's going to be similar to, like, a Saturday Night Live feel episode, because they're definitely, besides the fact of making the, whatever you call it, Stargate-related movie, they're going to parody things like The Wizard of Oz and Farscape. It has a picture of Teal'c and Sam dressed up in Farscape costumes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, kind of poking fun, at Browder and Claudia. So.
Well, that would be funny if they do that with them being there, from being on Farscape. Huh?
Yeah, definitely. But I know it just says, they're kind of doing it as a joke, too, for the fans and, like, giving them things they want, like... obviously, like I said, they're going to show Jack and Sam getting married, although that's probably an alternate reality or something, I'm guessing. But
And then what else do supposed to do a send-up of Star Trek and a couple others, right?
It just says Star Trek, Farscape, and then I saw The Wizard of Oz, and I think that I'm trying to remember what else. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. Oh, it says it has snarky references to Anderson and Shanks' departures, among other inside jabs.
I wonder if they'll make a little a little dig at Battlestar, huh? Maybe not.
Maybe.
That'd be kind of funny if they do something like that. May have Muffet walk around on the thing or something, huh?
Yeah.
Or have a good shot or something. I don't know. It'd be kind of funny if they did something like that to at least make a nod towards Galactica, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. And then Atlantis did it. I thought it was an outstanding episode. Anytime you bring in David Ogden Steers, you know it's going to be a good show.
Yeah,
you know?
Dead Zone. Yeah.
He is outstanding, outstanding. I liked him when he was on MASH. You know, he plays Colonel Winchester. Mm. You know, and you don't watch MASH?
No, I have a couple times.
I think it's on FX. They regurgitate that show every once in a while. He's an outstanding actor. And it was called, I didn't do the MVP from SG-1 from last week. Who stood out the most?
I'd have to say both Landry and Mitchell, because it was kind of them together, I think, was the main, at least to my point, the main humor in it. I really enjoyed their scenes together.
Mm. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate...
Maybe a 6. Less than last week. I liked last week's a lot better.
Yeah, that was good. And then now in the Atlantis did Progeny, and then they open it with the, I guess they sent something through the Stargate to this, I don't know, it was like a rogue gate. They didn't know what was on the inner side.
It said it was a research outpost. It was in the database on the computer. That's how they found it. There's people there, they're hoping are ancients, and then they get through the gate and they think they're still in Atlantis.
It's
so similar.
Yeah, and they turn around. The city is like six times the size of Atlantis, right? If, like, what do they say, 5 million people live in there.
Yeah, and it's all working, and they have everything they need there, and that's why they want their help. But the guy's obviously not willing to give them anything. They're like, we have a plan for the race, but we're not going to help you. You'll have to wait till we're good and ready, even if you're dead by then. Is pretty much what they were,
Yeah, and then David Ogden Steer's character is Oberoth. Is that his name? Oberoth. And he explains that they're an offshoot from the ancients and, blah, 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 they long ago, and they're in Atlantis and all that. And then they have nothing to offer him, and he made a point that you could stay here for a short time,
Yeah, but then they're going to kick him out.
Yeah. And then McKay, he seems like he dominates. Seems like every episode, it seems like, huh?
Yeah,
because when you were talking about the engines, the engines, then he goes, "Oh my God, you need all this stuff." He's like, "He's in a kid in a candy store,"
Yeah, all the different technology and everything. You could have fun, but yeah, I was really—I mean, I had figured it out a little bit ahead of time, but I was really happy with how they brought in the replicators, because up until that point, I definitely did not expect, that to be what was going on, and you realize, well, this whole thing's been totally mostly in their mind, and they never got away.
Yeah, they did the whole thing, because, it kind of set things off with Weir going to see Oberoth, and that kind of set everything off, because she admits that they're an Atlantean society, and it's, apparently sets it off that he has them put in that jail, right?
Yeah,
and then all a lot of that turns out to be imagination. I thought it was pretty cool that they did the destruction of Atlantis and everything.
Yeah,
with,
they built everything, but they seem to have kind of the same, flaw, I guess, as the other ones, because with that, I think his name was Mayim or Miam, something like that. The character that seemed to be good in there is kind of like with I don't know what number he was, but with the replicators on Earth, with the one guy, like, he had feelings more per se. I mean, they didn't come, it wasn't said like it was for the other one, but he seemed to be more human and wanted to help them, and him and a group of the people wanted to ascend, so they were willing to help if they helped them with ascension. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah,
and they want to weed out the aggression, so that way they wanted their code changed.
Yeah, and then McKay and then they he goes through things about SG-1s. I like it. They're finally bringing in the other series,
yeah,
kind
definitely
of.
Definitely been connecting them a lot better.
Yeah, they talk about Jack O'Neill and what happened to him, and Shepard says, "Oh, I read those reports too." So they're kind of connecting the storylines together, kind of.
Yeah. I'm though kind of wondering though how there's two different. Like, are these two different, you know, I don't want to say races, but, you know, like, groups of replicators, mm-hmm. or are they somehow connected to the old replicators? You know, you kind of wonder, because obviously they're, you know, sort of the same. Like they said, they can't just use Neon Pulse to get rid of them this time.
Yeah.
Because they're a lot more complex than they were before.
Yeah, and they showed the city going off into space, going to destroy Atlantis, right?
Yeah, because they want to get back at them, since the Atlanteans, after they built them, they thought they went too far, so I guess they tried to destroy them all, and obviously didn't.
Yeah.
Did a good job of it.
And then, McKay sets off, gets everything set up to set off the explosives, right?
Yeah.
And I like the banter between him and Shepard when they're bantering back and forth, but he goes, you got seven minutes, 15 seconds, whatever he said.
Something like that. What arbitrary numbers. And he's like, when it's going to blow up, he's like, again with the arbitrary numbers. Like, you know, just take it and go.
And they show him and Shepard arguing back and forth, and Weir says, gentlemen, please, we got important things to worry about.
Just to mediate.
Yeah, I mean the chemistry between those two. I mean, just the comedic is outstanding between him and McKay.
You know?
And I don't know if you read that. Apparently, in Gate World, they're talking about that there's going to be a storyline where there's going to be two McKays floating around, huh?
Yeah, I saw something about that. I didn't get to read it yet, but I did see.
Yeah,
something about that coming up. That will be interesting.
Yeah,
for
I guess
sure.
One's going to be really cool, and of course the original one. But it's going to be interesting to how the two play off one another. I guess they're going to pit the two against one another. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be good to see a McKay episode. I do really enjoy. You know, I didn't think I would, but I really like him, especially too because he comes from Stargate. I mean, he was originally from Stargate,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and they brought him over, which is good.
Yeah, he was really like a minor character on the show, right?
I mean, he was in a couple episodes.
Yeah.
He liked Sam, and he was trying to help save the world and everything, and they had, you know, bantered back and forth in that, and he always had a crush on her, and
mm-hmm.
so it was kind of like you knew who he was, but
and then,
I didn't see more of him.
What else? And then what's his name? That guy who helped them escape, he goes with them, right,
yeah.
in the ship, and then all of a sudden he turns on Weir and starts strangling her, right?
Yeah, so they have to throw him out the airlock.
Yeah, and they throw him. I thought that was pretty cool too. How
they're kind of like Battlestar.
It's like a Battlestar type of thing. Man,
they kept thinking of her always wanting to send him out the airlock.
Yeah, send him out the airlock. So they send him out the airlock. Now he's still alive, right? Because at the end they kind of zoomed in on him. So
you have him floating in space, and if he was a replicator, he would be there, you know,
forever. Huh?
Just floating. Yeah, I don't know if they're supposed to have sent any of the code actually went through or not, because when they tried to whatever it was change, get rid of their aggression. I know McKay had sent it through, but considering they changed his around, I guess it didn't work. I don't know. They didn't exactly say so.
Yeah, because they showed from Atlantis the other city, you know, blown up in the atmosphere and stuff. And then so you're kind of wondering, did it really work or not? You know,
I would assume even to some extent, even if they were blown up, they could probably, if there, you know, if any of them left, they could probably rebuild each other. I don't know what else to call it.
Yeah, replicate. Maybe that's why they showed that guy at the end, knowing that he's still out there. So maybe they'll probably play into a storyline later in the season or something.
Yeah, I definitely think there's going to be more coming on that. I don't think they're done with it.
And then the notes they had, I got this from Gate World. I said, the revelation about the possible origin of the replicators explains the answers to two nagging questions from SG-1 mythology. I said, first, how the spider-like replicators, intelligent but made up of inch-long blocks, I don't know what that is, learns to create first... the first human form replicator made of nanites by simply studying the android Reese from the SG-1 unnatural selection.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Though I'm curious yet how she's even connected to the ancients, but I guess still.
Yeah, and then secondly, it says explains why the ancient library of knowledge downloaded into Jack O'Neill's brain happened to contain the schematics of a handy-dandy weapon capable of destroying a humanoid replicator with a single shot by disrupting the bond between the nanites.
Yeah, which is how they got rid of part of it before. Yeah, that's true, too.
So that was amazing how they kind of linked all that together. I mean, that's...
I like how they are definitely been crossing over stories. I think, though, they've been taking a lot of SG-1... stuff and putting it in Atlantis. I think they need to do the same with SG-1, take some of the you know, eventually maybe take some of the Wraiths. I mean, I know they can't have the Wraiths get there, but it would be nice to see some continuity between, you know, having it show up in SG-1, too.
Yeah, well, as we said last week, I don't know why they don't have some big storyline. It bounces back and forth between both of the shows for, like, 3 weeks. You know, if it start on SG-1, go through Atlantis, and then ends in the following week on SG-1 again. You know?
Right. I know they've done that with other shows, maybe not sci-fi shows, but...
Yeah. It would make sense if they did
that. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then next week they play on the story that, I guess, Weir's back on Earth and everything was a figment of her imagination. There is no Atlantis.
Like, there is no Atlantis. I don't even know if there's a Stargate at that point.
And
it's called the real world.
And then that's the one, apparently, where Richard Dean Anderson shows up in, right? As a brief appearance. Right?
Yeah, it does say he's in. That's the other thing I was kind of concerned about is, I don't remember if I read it for that episode or if I read it for SG-1, but it did say a cameo appearance. I wonder how much he's actually going to be in these episodes.
Maybe just that one little scene, huh?
Yeah, because that kind of makes you wonder. I mean, they're hyping it up so you'll watch it, and then he's not even going to be in it. That would kind of suck.
Well, it's funny because next week's also he'll be in the 200th SG-1. It kind of plays in. He's on both shows then. So
I think he'll be in the SG-1 a decent amount, I hope. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't see them. I think too many people would get mad if he wasn't, because they have totally been advertising for a long time.
Yeah, and then what else?
We might see the Furlings, too. It did mention, although I don't know how serious that part's going to be.
Really?
But it did mention the Furlings.
And then, I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, the one guy that wakes up weird and says, you know, there's no Atlantis. And he was the captain of the Enterprise B on the Star Trek Generations movie. So that's a little nod towards Star Trek, you know?
Yeah, because they're all Canadian actors.
Yeah.
They're all in everything. And they use the same set.
And he was also the one that was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Did you watch Ferris Bueller?
Yeah, I have seen that.
Yeah, he was the kid with the sports car in the garage.
Oh.
Yeah, he was in that, and he also was in The Generations, and now he's going to be showing up as whoever he is in the in Atlantis.
Yeah.
So it's amazing.
Yeah, the same people cross over all the time, which is good. You start to learn the actors and everything. And
it's just funny because they pop up and like, oh, wait a minute, you're in Generations, and then...
Yeah.
How they, you know, show up from time to time. So, and anyway, the MVP from, what was that, Progeny?
You know, I don't know if I guess I'd say McKay again.
Really?
I think they all kind of had an equal, I don't know, I want to say size role in there. Mm-hmm. I guess Weir's was a little bit bigger. But yeah, I still like McKay's comments. He had this whole thing about his probing and everything, which was good. So.
Really? And then a scale 1 to 10?
Maybe 7.5, 8. I thought it was pretty good. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, this one, I like this one better than the SG-1, I thought. Just, the storyline had, depth.
More depth.
Yeah, more depth, and the whole thing with the city being destroyed, and, and all that, David Ogden steers, and I mean, and actually McKay kind of, he's like a scene stealer, because even he's not really dominant in the episode,
right.
his one-liners steal the show, you know?
Yeah, and now another, somebody else knows, too, Atlantis is not destroyed. I mean, I guess some of the Wraiths know, but I wonder if that'll play into part later, because they obviously still thought that Atlantis was gone, so.
Huh, and then now, what was that one-liner they said? Oh, when they're trying to escape, or how are we going to destroy all of them? They all look at McKay, you know.
And he goes, like, you should know how to do it.
And he goes, why don't I just go on these missions all by myself then?
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny. You know, he knows he's the brainiac of the... And then during that first thing, when they're all talking and about their plan, and we'll do the plan at the time and place of our choosing, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, why don't you tell us your plan? He goes, I don't think you'll be able to grasp it. And then McKay says, why don't you try me? I'm pretty good at grasping things or something. You know, I thought that was pretty funny, too.
Yeah. He thinks he knows everything, but...
He pretty much does.
Yeah, I was just going to say, he pretty much does know everything.
And,
give Daniel run for his money, I think. So.
Yeah, I mean, he saves them, you know, every episode. You know, I guess he's like he's the scientist. The other guy didn't show up at all, the doctor, huh? Dr. Beckett didn't show up on this one.
That's true, yeah. He wasn't in it, I don't think, at all.
Yeah, now, do they do that? I mean, you don't see him in one episode, and they turn up, you know, like, well, I guess with Daniel Jackson, he wasn't on last week.
Yeah, with the minor characters. Usually all the major characters were there. I am surprised Daniel hasn't been there, but I don't know if it's he didn't want to be, or if it's, like you said, maybe part of the budget or what.
Interesting. So, well, Scully, we're at the end of our time. Jamie?
Okay.
All right. Will you mind me calling you?
Jamie
it's
fine.
Cody. All right, Jamie, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Jamie, otherwise known as Scully Girl, with our Stargate review. That was excellent. I said I liked the Atlantis episode a lot better than SG-1. And next, in a few minutes, we'll be joined by Koenig Rules with our 4400 and Doctor Who. He's got some update on Doctor Who as well, so we'll talk to him. He goes, I get shafted, so I speak fast. So anyway, I want to talk about this. Who died? City Slickers actor Bruno Kirby died. Bruno Kirby, a veteran actor who co-starred in When Harry Met Sally and City Slickers, died at 57 years old. He died Monday in L.A. from complications related to leukemia, according to a statement from his wife, Lynn Sellers. So I can't remember that character he played. Was he the one of the friends? Anyway, in the Yahoo News, they say actors Bruno Kirby and Leonardo DiCaprio arrive at the West Coast screening of The, whatever The is. So The maybe is the movie he did with Howard Hughes, the Howard Hughes movie. So, but I don't know. It's who else? Anybody else? The Duff. They're talking about the Duff sisters attend Material Girls premiere. What else? The Hoff pays up. I don't know what that is. And actually, this week we're going to have the Paris Hilton's going to be in Las Vegas. She's going to be releasing her CD and also be doing a stunt in between the Flamingo Hotel and the Imperial Palace with a guy called Beecher. They're going to a bunch of midgets apparently going to wrap him in a hot dog bun. And they're going to drop him into a vat of ketchup, and he's going to somehow hold his breath for 10 minutes in this vat of ketchup. So it's the name is Jeff Beecher. Is a new bar at the Imperial Palace called Beecher's Madhouse. Beecher's Rock House, excuse me. So we'll see. And I see the chat room. Do you guys like the Stargates this week? Absolutely. Liked Atlantis a lot better than SG-1. And again, I want to thank everybody for joining us in the chat room. Quite a few. And then it's a good political discussion. And Scully Girl says, I wish, brought up with the 4400, I wish they would kill Isabel. So, I don't know. And what else? The China apparently has banned The Simpsons from primetime TV. So, China's really trying to select what they show on TV or not. And Rick Fox, I don't know who that is, scores a role in FX's Dirt. So, Rick Fox may have given up basketball, but not the spotlight. The former L.A. Laker has scored a recurring role in the new FX series Dirt, a spokesman said. Apparently, the show, which stars Courtney Cox, is the editor-in-chief of two top tabloids, will play Prince Tyrese. Fox 37 has collected a handful of acting credits over the last 12 years, including Holes, Eddie, He Got Game, and The Collectors. His most recent appeared as a shirtless sought-after masseur in the movie Minnie's First Time. He was married to actress Vanessa Williams for 5 years. The couple split in 2004. The same year he retired from the NBA. So that's interesting. And FX and all them. And also, how about that? They had the Dances with the Stars, and they have Tucker Carlson, of all people, on there with Jerry Springer. I couldn't believe it. And they unveiled him. So just Jerry Springer and Tucker Carlson are going to be on Dancing with the Stars, of all things. And Monday Night Football apparently scored a touchdown in the ratings for ESPN. The debut of ESPN's Monday Night Football scored the network's highest preseason ratings in 3 years, although the ratings are off significantly from last year's preseason premiere on ABC. So it's interesting as well. And let's see, Fox, Emmy's texting goodie bags. They're talking about the goodie bags and stuff. And Star Trek's going to unveil a new captain's log. This has been new games coming out to honor the 40th anniversary of Star Trek. Apparently, all five Star Trek captains, Kirk, Picard, Sisko, Janeway, and Archer, are beaming aboard Star Trek Legacy, a new video game marking the 40th anniversary of the legendary franchise. Apparently, this is going to span all of the series. So, I think with that, we'll be joined by Mr. Koenig Rules in a moment. There we go. Mr. Koenig Rules, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. It sounds like the 4400 dripping off Stargate.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so.
And how about the thing with the Star Trek video game coming out, Legacy? It's going to involve all the captains, huh?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's really good. Are they going to have Shatner's voice?
Yeah, all the original voices. Shatner,
original
Picard.
Wow.
Oh, here he comes. There you go.
There we go.
There we go. Wow.
Yeah.
What a voice that woman has, huh? She can really belt them out. Yeah, Patrick Stewart, Avery Brooks, Sisko, and Kate Mulgrew and Bacula are all going to be in this game.
Is Richard Dean Anderson going to be in this too?
I don't think
did you say he was 200 years old?
I didn't say anything about him 200 years old. I think you did, didn't you?
Right. He doesn't look a day over 180.
Yeah, I remember years ago he was on General Hospital.
Oh, was he?
There
Wait
you
a
go.
Minute.
Yes,
really?
Yes.
Boy, you are showing your age.
Absolutely.
I remember when Rick Springfield was on General Hospital.
Now, how about the, I don't want to hurt Scully's feelings about the ratings. Actually, the ratings did go up a little bit for the SGs.
Oh, they did? 1.5?
Yeah, well, ratings for SG-1 Atlantis matched the season premiere ratings on August 11th, rebounding slightly after after season lows the previous week.
1.6, right?
So, yeah, let me see. Uninvited in the 9 o'clock time slot earned a 1.4 household rating, which is an increase of one-tenth of a point from the last week. And Atlantis built on its lead and once again with the premiere of Progeny, earning a 1.6 rating. So Atlantis is seeing a little boost. So they're doing better than SG-1.
Well, I guess they'll be on at least another
season?
Couple episodes.
So the new lead-in series on Friday, Night Stalker, did a 0.9 rating.
Well, that's I guess okay, huh?
Yeah, and they did this. Both the Stargates did a summer high rating for the for men ages 25 to 54.
Hmm.
So
not females, huh?
No.
Females don't like Stargate.
I guess not. Well, when what's her name shows up next week, they'll do that. Anderson and all that. So, no, what'd you think of the? I liked the 4400. I thought it was outstanding, huh?
Oh yes.
I got caught up a little bit with what's his name? Who's that guy?
Jordan Collier.
Jordan Collier. He
comes back.
He's what's his name is Bruce Campbell, right? The real name.
Is it Bruce Campbell?
Well, whatever.
I know it's
Nicholas.
Campbell.
Nicholas Campbell.
Like Campbell's
whatever.
Soup.
Campbell soup. And then they did the whole thing with him. Is it really him? He's in the beard and everything now because you said last week he stood up at the end of the it interrupted the wedding, right?
Right. Sean.
Now he is.
I'm your father, Sean.
So he is Sean's father, right?
What? No. He's not his father, really.
Oh.
No, he isn't. He isn't.
Really?
He isn't. No, he just he took Sean in under his wing so that Sean could use his talents for the benefit of the 4400.
Oh, really?
So he's not like Darth Vader.
Oh, wow.
Actually, I don't think he's exactly a bad guy. I think Isabel is the evil of force of the 4400.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Billy Campbell, there you go.
Billy Campbell.
Wait a minute now. Who's Paul Campbell? Man, Paul Campbell's Billy on Galactica. You got all these people mixed up.
Oh, wow. Must have been a day for you, huh?
Yeah. So then they...
you don't drink.
No. So Isabel was mad. Isabel's mad because the wedding was called off, right?
Right.
And he wanted to explain about Jordan Collier. You got to see where he's been. He supposedly was dead and everything else, right?
Mm-hmm. So that's his ability that he can come back from the grave.
Evidently. With a beard, no less, huh?
With a beard. He looked like Jesus there for a while preaching, you know?
And what else? And they tracked him down to this little tent village, right? Or
yes,
some kind of village.
And that was his condo units or whatever, and he was living in one of the condo units, right?
Yeah. And then the second story was that chick, what's her name, with the kid, right? And her sister came in.
Diane.
Yeah.
The chick with the kid. Really?
I'm trying to catch up.
You've got to make this sexy, right?
Sorry. I'm trying to catch up with this.
The chick with the kid. Diane with Maya.
Yeah. And
Maya,
and then she says that you're supposed to get together with her, what's her name's boyfriend.
Yeah, and you're going to get married.
You're going to marry her.
And have a daddy.
Yeah.
And then it's starting to happen, right?
Yeah, at the end of the episode, because she bumps into him at a grocery store or something like that, right?
Right, and then they start talking, and they said this is our first date. Well, no, it's not really a first date.
Yeah.
You know, sounds to me like a Stargate dialogue.
Yeah. And what else? And then,
what's his name? Jordan drove Isabel out of the center.
Yeah, because he's actually the one in charge of the 4,400.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
See
what happened is, and you didn't see this episode where he got shot. He touched Isabel before he was going to make his speech, and Isabel sort of, as a little girl, sort of gave him the impression that everything was going to be okay, but she misled him with this vision because Isabel knew that he was going to die from Tom's son. Tom's son was also brought back into
jail. Yeah, because he was jailed for killing Collier?
Yes, he's being used. He had these time lapses, and so one almost thinks that he's being controlled by these aliens again. Remember they talked about, not aliens, these humans, good faction and a bad faction, and I think he was being used by the bad faction to kill Jordan.
Really? Because Diggs is in the chat room. He's the owner of LV Rocks, and he's a big fan
of
the 4,400. He says, Tom's son, the sister of that one chick, Jordan, everyone came back this week.
Right, right. I mean,
who's Lily?
What?
Who's Lily? He says they just brought back Lily.
Lily was the Richard's wife that they aged in the first episode of the season into Tippi Hedren.
Oh, okay.
Remember that?
Tippi Hedren,
Tippi Hedren and died, and Isabel aged from a little baby to a naked woman.
And who's Kyle?
Kyle.
Or Chad Faust.
What?
Chad Faust.
Kyle, wait.
I don't know.
Jeez, you know, it's been a long day.
But it was a good story, and then
it was a great story, wasn't it?
Yeah,
the chick with the kid, especially.
Well, no, I was able to follow it because then Sean goes back to Isabel and explains why. She goes, "Are we getting married or not?" Because I think he knows if he says no.
Well, I'm glad Sean didn't marry her.
Well,
she's an evil bitch.
Whoop. Because eventually, because he knows if he doesn't marry her, all hell is going to break loose, right?
Well, it sounds like all hell is going to break loose anyway, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, there's only, three episodes left in the season?
Two.
And
two episodes. And guess who's coming back next week?
Peter
Coyote.
Oh, he's coming back.
Ow!
Yeah. Oh,
don't sound effect?
Peter Coyote. No,
Peter
I haven't watched it. This is the first season I'm watching the 4,400, so I'm trying to catch up. And,
it really kicks off. Oh, and they're going to bring back Dr. Burkhoff, too.
Who's Burkhoff?
Remember the guy who was injecting himself with the promite?
Oh, him.
Too? Yeah, they're going to bring him back, too.
Really?
The reanimator.
Oh, wow. So
yeah, they're going to bring back everyone.
Wow.
I hope it gets renewed.
Now,
don't you?
I imagine we'll get. How are the ratings holding up?
I don't know.
Huh.
I mean, they're very quiet about both the Dead Zone and the 4,400.
Huh. Because, well,
the
Dead Zone.
Dead Zone has David Ogden Stiers in a couple episodes this season. Did you know he was on the Dead Zone?
Yeah, well, somebody said he's a regular on the Dead Zone this season.
He's sort of semi regular.
Yeah. And what else? How did it end now, the episode end? He ends up. They end up doing something where he remembers who he is then, and it finally lets...
Well, remember, they bring back Tom's wife, who's a 4,400 Alana.
Oh, that's
right. Who touches him and unlocks his mind and makes him recall all of the memories.
Yeah, now, she said that she goes, some of the things she saw were disturbing. I guess that's things to come, right?
Yes.
So it's this war that's going to take place, I guess?
Yeah, well,
really?
Apparently... there's some type of period between when he was shot to when he wakes up on the beach where the 4,400 were deposited originally. So he's probably picking up these things of when he probably was brought back to the future. I don't know.
Wow.
It's a complex plot, man. You know, I was saying, I don't think they had this plan for it when they first started developing the series.
Huh. And
I think they're making it up as they go along.
Oh,
whoops.
No.
And then, you know, like Ron Moore's Battlestar.
Yeah. Well, and then he remembers who he is, and they go and they release Tom's son.
Right. Because right. How could he be charged for murder when Jordan's alive?
Yeah. They even did a flashback of that when he told him don't come visit me. Just leave me stay in prison or whatever.
Right. Right. You have to get season two.
Yeah. And so then they reunite, and then what else? So then next week is what? They're getting ready for the second to last episode of the season.
Yeah. And usually the two final episodes of the season are parts one and part two, so it's probably going to be a cliff that'll be then paving the way for the major cliff in the last episode.
Huh. Now, is the chick that played the Borg Queen, is she going to show up in the last two episodes?
I don't know.
What's her name?
They've got a lot of chicks, don't they?
Yeah. well, how do they call her? Broad
Scrooge
or what?
Or Krug?
Alice Krieg. Alice Krieg,
Alice.
Yes. Yes.
Boy, we're really ruining the names tonight. Billy, Bruce Campbell.
Paul Campbell. But Alice Krieg, right. she played that one at the beginning of the season that was with Tom, you know, when showing him all those children.
Right.
Right. And
right.
She was in which one? She was in First Contact playing the Borg
right.
Queen, and then
right.
she showed up in Star Trek Voyager with Janeway.
That's right. 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 Yeah. That's right. Very good.
Yes.
You must be a sci-fi fan.
Well, I mean, this 2400, I'm saying it's good, but it's hard to catch up. If, you know, I have not seen
it. It is.
You know,
it is. It's like a soap that's been on for 2 years, and now the third season, it's like, what happened, you know?
Yeah. And now moving over to we said he had some Doctor Who news?
Doctor Who. Well, Christmas Invasion, I thought, was going to be out in December, but apparently they're saying that Christmas Invasion, the one that is between season one and the season two episodes, they're going to air everything in order, so Christmas Invasion will be shown at the end of September.
Oh, really?
And I'm not sure if it's going to be shown in its entirety, whether they're going to cut it down, because it's a full hour, 60 minutes.
Hmm.
So if they plan to show Christmas Invasion and another episode of Who, I'm wondering if it's going to be in a 2.5 hour time slot.
Interesting, interesting.
But you almost need Christmas Invasion, because without that, you don't know how the Doctor recovers and everything from the end of season one to the beginning of season two.
Yeah. Now, in the chair, they're asking: Is Heroes, the new show, is it too much of a 4400 ripoff?
I think it's going to be not as much 4400 as X-Men.
Oh.
Yeah. I think it's going to be more X-Men than.
Now wait a minute. Is that going to be on a network?
Yes, NBC.
Forget about
it. Shown
then.
Monday night. You remember what happened Monday night
yep.
with Surface?
It's the killing fields for our sci-fi
yeah,
shows. Monday
yeah.
night. Yeah,
it is. But they've got some great stars in it. Pastar or what?
Pat Boone?
What is it?
Pat Boone?
No. The guy who was in Miracles. Do you remember that show, Miracles?
Oh, yes, yes. He was on Miracles. Yeah. That,
yeah. What's his name? And he starred in Prophet.
Oh, yeah.
On the Fox show Prophet.
Whatever the hell his name.
Adrian Pastar?
Oh, there you go.
Is it? I don't know.
I'll believe you, yes.
Yeah.
Actually, Khan had to say something. So whatever. Anything about Pat Boone? What?
I was going to say Adrian Vandenberg, but
Vandenberg, who's that?
He's a guitarist.
Adrian Zamed from
Adrian Paul.
TJ Hooker?
Adrian Paul. Adrian.
I shall be only one.
Adrian, yeah?
I shall be only one.
No, Adrian, you're Adrian.
Let's develop a whole new series based on bad actors' names.
I thought Heroes was on ABC.
Oh, wait a minute, Conan. You got to get your act straight here. What is
what?
This? No, what was on ABC, Heroes?
What's Heroes is NBC. No,
what
I got
shows,
my act
wait,
straight.
Wait, what show's on ABC? There's a new show premiering after Lost. It's kind of like, it's going to take the place of Invasion, but it's going to still stick to that whole.
Is it like those six people are 6 degrees of separation or something.
Probably, I think that one you're talking about. Yeah, 6 degrees of separation or something.
I don't
think
Kevin Bacon's in it, though.
That's no. Right.
Oh, I do have a Galactica tidbit.
Uh-oh, what's that?
And that is when they start focusing in either episode 4 or 5 on the Cylon base star, the Cylon mottos are all going to be naked. The only reason they wear clothes is for the humans.
Wow.
So we're going to see Six and Boomer and Lucy Lawless in the buff.
Wow,
you know, ratings are going to really go high. Something's going to go high.
Dean Stockwell's too, right?
What?
And Dean Stockwell.
Oh, God.
Actually, yeah, yeah.
Geez. Heroes. Dean Stockwell and what's the other one that looks, Leoben? And who's the other one? Leoben, there's another one that looks sort of an intellectual male Cylon with short hair.
Yeah.
What's his name?
I know, the one with the, it was a reporter.
Yeah.
Actually, Darth Condi is saying Heroes is on NBC. The 9 is after Lost.
Okay. Well, see, I was right. Heroes is on NBC. Thank you, Darth Condi.
Yeah.
Darth Condi. Condom?
Yes, the Condi Rice, the girl with the David Letterman smiles, I like to say. What else? And what else is going on?
Did you like Stargate at all this week?
Yes.
You liked Atlantis, right?
Oh, outstanding. I liked Atlantis a lot better than I liked SG-1. Yes.
Yeah, Atlantis is really, and I liked it the week before where they focused on, what's his face?
Who?
What's his face?
SG-1?
Yeah, the Atlantis, the Savage.
Oh, yeah, the Ronan.
Ronan, you go.
Yes, this is very good. I like seeing David Ogden Steers show up. He's a great
he's
actor.
He's good, isn't he?
Yes, I keep looking for Hawkeye to show up in the MASH. Yeah.
So what else? What else can we talk? I've seen the first 6 episodes of Doctor Who Season 2.
Oh, how is it?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Wow, it's a quarter phrase.
I mean, if the Daleks were the major villain of the first season, the Cybermen are the major villain of the second season, and the Cybermen remind me a lot of the Cylons.
Wow.
Oh, it's cool. It really is. I mean, I really like Doctor Who. Of course, I'm in the minority, I guess. I like the episode where he falls in love.
Oh, really? Now,
but it's not too Rose.
Now, how do you compare? Now, do you like the second season better than the first season of Doctor Who?
I think I like the second season better than the first because the Doctor is just more multidimensional. I mean, Eccleston was good, but it seemed to me like he was on 10 cups of coffee all the time. What this Doctor does is, as he's reading something, he takes glasses out of his pocket and puts them on. So he has the intellectual, professorial look at times and at other times he looks like this innocent babe because he's so young. I mean, he can play a number of images that Eccleston, I mean, there's nothing wrong with Eccleston. Please don't get me wrong, but I think Tennant is just far superior.
How about, do you watch Kyle XY? It seems like a John Doe type of a series. I don't know who he is and all this stuff. Seems like a younger John Doe.
See, I haven't seen Kyle X twice. No. Is he sort of
ABC family?
Is it the Y chromosome that's missing, or what?
No, no, no. It's a ABC family episode.
Oh.
That's a I haven't seen it. I know it's this woman finds this kid in the forest or something. He's naked. And
sounds just like John Doe.
Yeah, and then after she has sex with him, she brings him home to live with her family.
Wait a minute, after she has sex with him, this doesn't sound like any family I know.
No, I'm kidding. I don't know what the hell it is.
Funny family to me.
And actually, how many seasons do you think the 4400 is good for?
I think it'll at least go 5 seasons.
Really?
I really do. They say typically the 3rd season you can gauge in terms of if it's run out of steam or if it's going full blast. The 4400, I mean, I don't know about you, but it's going, full throttle.
Well, yeah, I'm getting into it. They need at least 5 seasons for syndication. So, I mean, that's always been the
so
rule.
So I think with Battlestar Galactica, there's no problem in it going 5 seasons.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see a lot of significant things in season 3 on Battlestar.
Yeah, and I see Kyle XY, they repeat it on ABC on Fridays, so, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Well, I'm watching Stargate.
You're watching Stargate? Yes.
Are you watching Stargate?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Good.
And what else? How about the, I lost something. There's a question popped up. I was looking to answer it. Now, Surface, it's Sci-Fi Channel's airing Surface, is that right?
They did air Surface, but interesting that you should mention that because they got a DVD box set that came out today.
Hmm.
The entire collection of Surface episodes.
Wow. Now, what about the...
I'm sure you're going to buy it.
Yeah. What about the Battlestar Galactica recap? I didn't know, even though it was going
to air.
Oh,
yeah, the story so far. It's supposed to be airing a lot in September with Laura Roslin, Mary McDonnell hosting it. And it was supposed to be on NBC, the West Coast feed, right after football on, was it Sunday or Saturday night? But I don't get the West Coast feed. Well, you probably do.
West Coast feed? For what? Football? What?
For NBC.
Oh, okay.
There's an East Coast feed for NBC and a West Coast feed for NBC.
Absolutely.
And it was coming after football, this 1 hour recap of everything that happened in season 1 and season 2.
Oh, well. Uh-oh. Speaking of that, Koenig, we'll let you go.
Wow. Yes, time flies.
Time flies, and we're having fun. So we'll
That's
talk
right.
to you well, next week as we
yes.
gear
Thanks
up for
Thanks
for
having me on.
You're welcome. And we'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
Thank you. And that was Koenig Rules with our 4400 Battlestar Galactica and Doctor Who update and review. And in the morning is Daily Noise. Friday is Spankwagon, followed by King Hesh. And, of course, Sunday is Carnage. I'm Sean Mack, subject to discussion at lvrocks.com. And good